Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, a very busy week in the Capitol. And first of all, wish I was there. Overview from the Governor's State of the State speech, Democratic reaction, the new mining law giving local governments months to enact their own ordinances in the wake of the repeal of the moratorium, and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald says the former GAB council did try to elect Democrats in the recall. And finally, the gentleman testifying at the Tech Council who says we should all have chips in our hands. Wish I was there.
We are getting positive things done for the people of Wisconsin. As mentioned, more people are employed in Wisconsin than ever before in the history of our state. And just last week, the Department of Workforce Development announced that the unemployment rate had dropped to 3%. The only other time it was that low was in May, June, and July of 1999 when Tommy Thompson was our governor. You know, things were pretty good back then. They're pretty good now, and they're only going to get better.
I understand that today, the governor just, you know, brought out families from across Wisconsin and said it sounds like it's a tax credit, for, you know, $100 per child. So we have looked at measures to look at assistance for in child care costs and being able to deduct that from your taxes. Again, we haven't seen with the governor. He simply brings out Wisconsin families and talks about $100 per child.
And I think one of his main points is we want to be able to send $100 checks to voters before the election.
I don't know why the governor gets a pass on transparency, why the governor gets a pass on the inhumane treatment and the criminal charges and the criminal investigation related to Lincoln Hills. I don't know. I don't know why the governor gets a pass when six people were indicted in the matters that we're talking about and they were affiliated with the governor. How can we not be looking at the fact that this investigation got to the root of inappropriate behavior by people who are still in this building?
Probably the most discussed provision that was changed in this act is the elimination of the mining moratorium. The mining moratorium required applicants for a non-ferrous metallic mining approval to provide for DNR verification information showing that a sulfide mining operation in the U.S. or Canada had operated for at least 10 years without polluting surface water or groundwater, and in addition, that a sulfide mining operation in the U.S. or Canada had been closed for at least 10 years without polluting surface water or groundwater.
Do you believe that the GB staff actively sought to tilt elections against Republicans in 11 and 12 and recalls?
I do.
Based on what?
DOJ said in my office, in their briefing related to the report, they are absolutely convinced that John Doe 3, which is not formal, I get, but a spinoff of 2, the target was a committee to elect Republican Senate. But the legal counsel over there certainly was working overtly to make sure that things broke towards Democrats winning recalls. There's no doubt in my mind.
I stress to you as I look at it this way, yes, it's an implant in your hand, and that scares a lot of you. I see the day where you'll be able to go through an airport and use your hand, and your passport will be on it, your airline ticket, and it's going to be simple it's going to be that simple and that easy. And I don't think anybody wants the chip that's in my hand today. And someone posted on social media today, well, it's going to beg to have your hand stolen. Well, the chips that are on development is that the chip won't work if there's no heart rate to it. So if it doesn't detect your heart rate, the chip won't work. And that sounds far-fetched, but that's how far we've come in about 110 days.
Now, JR, this was Governor Walker's eighth State of the State. He spoke for more than an hour. He laid out a whole laundry list. There were a few things that surprised us, the child credit, things like that, and we'll get into those. But overall impression of the governor's State of the State speech?
Governor Walker, from when I talked to people this week, I mean, he got good marks for the speech itself.
Yeah.
But the stuff he rolled out, it was kind of a shotgun approach to try and hit a number of different demographics that may be important to his reelection this fall. $100 credit, you know, that's going to hit people's mailboxes right before the elections, right before school.
Yep.
Welfare, that's going to not only play to the base, but what I'm told, it polls well with everybody. I mean, not everybody, but large swaths of the electorate. He's done $4.5 billion for Foxconn. Well, not him himself, but the overall package, locals and everything
with
else.
With local incentives of?
The $50 million for WEDIC, for local, for rural communities. Dane County is doing much better than some rural areas, so they're not seeing the same kind of economic growth, so that's a kind of a nod to them. It's kind of an acknowledgement of he's got these kind of folks he's got to get excited about him come November. So it seemed like there was maybe good policy in there, but also some smart politics in what he's trying to do.
Okay, before we go any further analyzing that, let's listen to about a minute of the governor speaking. First of all, and overall set the tone. In our old newspaper business, we used to want to write the headlines. Well, this is the governor trying to write newspaper headlines, and then he does talk about the child care credit. Let's listen to about a minute of the governor speaking.
In Wisconsin, employment is at historic highs, and unemployment is at historic lows. We invested more actual dollars into schools than ever before in our history. The state property tax is gone. Wisconsin received a bond rating upgrade from three national agencies. Our healthcare systems are ranked number one in the nation for quality. And we announced the largest economic development project in state history. It has been an amazing year, a historic year. So we're going to create a new Wisconsin child tax credit. Families from across the state will receive $100 for every child under 18 living at home. A couple hundred dollars more in the family budget could really make a difference, particularly when getting ready for the next school year. It could be a new pair of shoes, a winter coat, activity fees at school, or maybe a copay at the doctor or the dentist office. We know sometimes Wisconsin families face challenges when making ends meet, and this new child tax credit, well, we think it can help. Today, I'm joined by families from all over Wisconsin who will benefit from our child tax credit. So today, I ask you, the members of the state legislature, to pass our plan so that by the time these kids and all the others like them across the state begin school this fall, their parents will receive a check in the mailbox.
Let's laundry list some of these items, JR, okay? The $100 per child credit payable to families.
Any kid under 18 as of December 31st.
Right. And that's going to cost the
$122 million, another $1 million to administer the program.
Right. And the $50 million for rural economic development. That was a news starter that we didn't hear this week.
Yep.
And he also wants, as we knew, more state aid for the lowest spending and the rural district, sparsity aid.
Sparsity aid is about $6.7 million.
Thanks, I didn't know that.
The low spending districts, that would be all property tax revenue. So there'd be that. But yeah, I mean, as somebody told me this week, this was a Tommy Thompson-esque speech. You covered Tommy more than I did. I just caught the end of his term. But Tommy would give speeches where he set the stage of these big, grand visions, these very aggressive programs. He liked to spend money and do things, right? Build things. That was kind of his.
Yeah.
This is Governor Walker, his version, not as aggressive as maybe Tommy Thompson was, but his vision of, we have a surplus, we're going to now go out and direct it back to taxpayers, put it into these programs, and do some things that are pretty popular ahead of my reelection bid.
One thing that I hadn't heard before, $20 million for career creator program. I don't know how that's going to work, and I don't know that he's put details, that he's put flesh on those bones yet.
Some of the stuff, like the small business plan, has mostly been out there before. Like,
and the family farm fund?
Tort reform. That was rolled out like the morning of the speech. Governor Walker did something smart this time where, well, we've covered a lot of these speeches. You get, you know, however long of a speech, you only focus on so many things. So Walker rolled it out kind of like bit by bit over the last couple weeks. Sparsity aid was a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
The morning of, he did a little bit of the WEDIC thing, tried to get that a little bit extra attention, some dairy stuff.
Yeah.
The health insurance stuff was over the weekend. So he rolled it out to get the attention on that and then used the child credit Wednesday as his big kicker, which is what we all kind of focused on because that was new.
Yeah, but he also still asked them to act on closing the juvenile prisons. Mm-hmm. And he also wants welfare reform. So here's my question. My understanding is that the ledge is going to be in session like one day in February. Is there any way in heck they can get to the child care credit and all these other four or five other things that he looked him in the eye and said, please pass?
The assembly is all of a sudden talking now about 4 days in February. Like they still want to get done in February. But the way we kind of heard it before was going to be like a couple days. Well, now they're talking about going Tuesday, Thursday probably, back-to-back weeks, maybe a Wednesday in there. Because they got a lot of stuff to get done. The Senate's talking about being in through March. Now, with what's been laid on the table the last week, maybe that changed the timetable. But the last time I checked, that was what they're looking at. It is going to be a challenge to finish all this stuff because what also is happening is you have all these lobbyists who know this is their last kick at the cat, get something done this session. So they are pushing these guys to add this bill, that bill, I mean, whatever pet project people have. Oh, by the way, lawmakers also have like these must-haves for the district back home. There's all this pressure all of a sudden building on doing things the last few days on the floor.
Right, and I want to start a new topic that the governor started over the weekend. The major health care reform item that he started, he calls it the Health Care Stability Plan. This intrigued me, JR, because he wants to take $150 million from the feds, $50 million in GPR, and he wants to deal with, I've seen different numbers, 200,000, 216,000 individuals who have been buying through Obamacare. Mm-hmm. The health care marketplace. And he wants to help them, he wants to avoid what he called in the speech a 36% average increase in premiums paid by those who must buy on the individual market. So, but at one point he was going to say in the speech, Washington has failed to act, failing to say that, you know, his Republicans control the White House and Congress. So this major initiative, which is patterned after something I think in Minnesota.
Yep, other states have it as well.
Although you and I saw the press release, the Minnesota program is like $500 million, and he's talking $200 million. This is a pretty big initiative, but he suddenly decided that he's going to not expand, take the MA expansion, but get into healthcare with this healthcare stability plan.
Yeah, and it's a reinsurance program, and so what they're looking at is, if you have claims over a certain level, I think they're talking $50,000, $250,000,
yeah,
it would cover that band of claims.
And the
idea is, if you cover those claims, it'll drive down costs because insurers are okay, I don't have to worry about that catastrophic bill, my stuff's down here. It's been done in other states. It is interesting talking to Republicans this week because this may be the one piece of Walker's speech that gets the most difficult to pass, because for years, Republicans, they've argued against Obamacare. They want to see it fail. They call it too expensive. They've highlighted the increases in the premiums. There's a marketplace. Say, look, this program is failing. Now Walker is going to look into prop up that marketplace,
yes,
and minimize the pain. Some Republicans will say, look, if we want to get rid of this thing and we want people to be unhappy with it, how are we going to do that if we're making them feel better about it? So they're feeling a little bit conflicted about that. I'm talking to some Republican lawmakers this week. My sense was the assembly may be more easy to go along with this, even though some people might not be happy about it. But in the Senate, you've got this conservative wing of the caucus. You're down a vote right now because Frank Lissay, his seat is vacant. Patty Schachner has won a seat. It's 18-14. You can lose one member, and that's it, to pass a bill. These four, five, six, depending on what issue it is, conservatives, will they really go along with an idea that would help, in some people's words, Obamacare? That's the one I'm watching the most. All the programs
I just find that intriguing. Time to listen to about a minute of the governor outlining his vision for what he's calling the healthcare stability plan.
And for the small number of people who seek coverage through the individual market and not through their employer or through Medicaid or Medicare, I propose that the state provide assistance to keep those premiums from making healthcare coverage unreachable for many of our fellow citizens. Under Obamacare, the so-called Affordable Care Act, premiums for people in the individual market are going up an average of 36% this year. Some are seeing much larger premium increases. For example, Christine from Brown County saw her premiums go up, but get this, almost $2,000 a month. A month. That's about 120% increase. That is unsustainable and unacceptable. Thankfully, our health care stability plan will help keep premiums at a reasonable level here in Wisconsin. This is a market-driven approach to bring stability to health care in Wisconsin.
There are two other elements to his health care changes, JR, just quickly. He wants a federal waiver to make senior care permanent, and he wants action on an assembly-passed bill on pre-existing conditions. Although you saw the release, the Democrats are backing off, saying there's a stipulation that you must have had continuous health care. But you had a PS on the reinsurance plan?
Yeah, Democrats are screaming hypocrisy. I mean, add in some other stuff in this plan about, like, the senior care waiver. Remember, Governor Walker wanted to move eligible seniors on senior care into Medicare Part D,
backed
off because of bipartisan blowback. But Democrats are screaming hypocrisy. Here's a guy who refused to take the Medicaid expansion money under the Affordable Care Act. Now he wants to take federal money to pay for this. Remember, he's talking about $50 million that we would find in savings through the Medicaid program, then attract $150 million more in federal money. They even talked to Republicans who said, look, we know we're going to get hit because of this by Democrats, because they're going to say, look, you wouldn't take that money here. And one of the reasons why you wouldn't take it is because you don't want the feds will turn the spigot off. Mm-hmm. But y'all would take it here. For this, aren't we also vulnerable to the feds turning off that spigot for that money?
Okay. The Democratic reaction, we used some of that in Wish I Was There. Assembly Leader hints this speech sounded like a going out of business sale. Governor Walker is taking ideas from Democrats and flip-flopping on promises made. Senate Democratic Leader Schilling, every time we drive over a pothole or cast a ballot for a school referendums, voters see the underfunding of our roads and local schools. Anything unpredictable in either their reactions or the reactions from the, what's the number, 15 Democratic candidates running for governor?
No, I mean, the Dem candidates for governor really hit on Foxconn quite a bit. The governor did talk about Foxconn.
Six times.
You know, embraced it. You know, he owns that issue, can't run away from it. They hit him on that, which also, again, I think is why Fry picked up this week the Weedick stuff is in there, the $50 million for rural communities, is those rural communities go, look, you gave that much money to Foxconn, well, what about us? So that may be kind of a nod to that issue for the governor.
Yeah. Okay, the other big news, JR, the Senate, this was, you know, I've watched that Capitol a long time. This was a historic debate. The Senate voted 18-13 along party lines to not confirm both Michael Haass and Brian Bell. I found the debate historical. There's a question, legal questions. It may end up in the lawsuits. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, he said, I have no trust in these individuals. Mm-hmm. And he said, 14 months ago, I brought them both in my office and said, you're going to be interims because you're not going to be confirmed. Then Michael Haass tweeted, that never happened. So I don't know who's right there. Your thoughts on that?
Haass initially said, we never had a meeting of the three of us. And Fitz went, so, well, yeah, it wasn't together. It was individual. I told him individually. Bell said, he never told me that I was interim, that my post in jeopardy. His staff told me that there was an issue with Mike Haas's appointment.
Yeah.
Somebody's not telling me the truth. I don't know who, or maybe they all misremember these meetings, but I've never seen something like that. I've never seen the Senate vote against confirmation and have a body say that doesn't matter, or to defy the Senate's wishes and go ahead and vote 4-2 to reappoint Mike Haass as an interim through April 30th administrator. It was interesting. Those commissions were set up to be partisan bodies, equally split 3-3.
Yes.
Republicans are kind of surprised that the Republican appointee as a clerk sided with the Democrats to keep Mike Haass on. Now, that may be a reflection of her view was he's done a good job administering elections. That's all she cares about. But politically, Republicans weren't very happy about that.
Right.
Then the Ethics Commission goes into a meeting the next day and says 5-1, we're not getting anything until February 27th.
Yeah, and before we get into that, let's listen to a few minutes of Senate debate. Senator Strobel and Senator Fitzgerald argue that these gentlemen should not be confirmed, and we have Senator Erpenbach, a Democrat, and Chris Larson arguing that it's an unfair process. So let's listen to the actual Senate debate on those confirmations.
Let's remember what happened in this investigation. Put yourself in these shoes. Let's just rattle off a few of these things. Homes were raided in pre-dawn hours, disrupting families in order to seize personal records and computing devices. Donors to nonprofits and political campaigns were harassed. Legal conduct was treated as illegal conduct until proven otherwise. Lives were upended, and innocent citizens were forced to spend thousands of dollars defending themselves in court. Personal records, including health information,
were seized and stored and not returned. This abuse of power, this penalizing of free speech, has no room in our state government, and those who are complicit in this abuse should not lead our elections and ethics commissions.
And if we go back even just a couple of years, Mr. President, what's going on with the majority party? You lose elections, so you change voter ID laws. You come up with an unconstitutional map. A John Doe investigation turns up people were committing crimes from the majority side of the aisle, and so you change the John Doe laws. You see a pattern here. You have administrators who were just doing their job and weren't that involved with what, a lot of what I've heard about, and you have an attorney general who's done a quote-unquote investigation that was full of inaccuracies, but still, within that investigation, did not find fault with Mr. Bell or Mr. Haas, nor did the attorney general recommend any punishments for Mr. Haas or Mr. Bell. When the majority leader, Mr. President, says that there aren't people comfortable with Mr. Haas or Mr. Bell, all I hear is they're not comfortable with two administrators from the watchdog agency that keeps an eye on the legislature. So we're going to get rid of them and get somebody else in there who will tell us what we want to hear.
I don't ever remember an instance where we had somebody before the Senate that we had a vote on confirmation in which those agencies were under an open DOJ investigation. Whether you believe that they did or didn't put their thumb on the scale to make sure that a majority was taken away from one party and given to another based on a public policy decision, which we all know what it was, Act 10. It was retribution, and it's there again in the DOJ report and the briefing. The idea that there was a circle of individuals, state employees, that were plugging hard drives in and out of their state computers to avoid open records and to scheme against one of the two parties in this building is unbelievable. And I can't have confidence in an agency that still is employing some of the individuals that were there.
If we're going to continue to try and make it, put up blockades to people to vote, ask for highly restrictive forms of identification, make it so university IDs expire every 2 years, making it harder for students to continue to vote. If there's been votes in this body to tilt the playing field through gerrymandering, if there's been votes to end the accountability board as it existed before, there's been motions and they've passed on a partisan line to end John Doe investigations against elected officials because they were hitting a little bit too close to home. And now this. There is a dark cloud hanging over our state, as been noted by the majority leader, but that cloud is caused by legislation like this that tilts the playing field against the public.
So now, JR, let's talk about how the Ethics and Elections Commissions responded.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, as you said, 4-2 vote to keep Mike Haas on the job through April,
mm-hmm.
correct? Then Senator Fitzgerald just said the Senate should name the elections administrator.
You just reported that somebody new, or we're going to do it.
Right. The Ethics Committee, the Ethics Commission, let's get it right, 5-1 vote to postpone naming an administrator. So there's no administrator at the Ethics Commission as we speak?
Not that I'm aware of. Brian Bell went back to the Department of State's Professional Services the day after the Senate confirmation vote and is working there as a budget analyst, I believe.
So what happens next in terms of the election? Are we going to end up in court? Because Michael Haas is on the job today?
Good question. There's been chatter about whether he's going to go to court. I don't know what's going to happen. What I do know from talking to people this week is this is personal for Senate Republicans.
Yeah.
You saw in the opening, once I was there, the question I asked Fitzgerald about the conspiracy talk. CERS, in their minds, they were targeted. They were the targets of the GAB. Senate Republicans, and it's not just Fitzgerald.
Senate Committee to Elect a Republican Senate.
It's his members who are really driving the sentiment of we were targeted, something was wrong, and he is kind of the voice of that sentiment. Lee of Ukmir gave a very impassioned speech on the floor this week talking about the confirmation votes. Erpenbach was saying he was sick of hearing about this through Twitter, press release, those things. He meant like we should be having a hearing, but Leah used it to say, well, I'm sure you're sick of it, John, but your emails weren't taken. Mine were. That's a sign of how this is really personal for them. The question I've got is, all right, now they want to go after, or Fitz wants to go after getting rid of the legal counsels. There is a request from the Elections Commission to add three staffers. He said that could open the door.
Which brings it before Joint Finance. Joint Finance could then abolish the job of legal counsel.
Or reclassify them. The question becomes, where does it stop? And I know I've talked to some Republicans who, they understand why the passion is there, because Fitz has said, until some of these folks are gone, he will not trust those agencies. But the other Republicans would go, we need to move on and focus on something else. I don't know the average voter gets this stuff or gets really incensed about it or really toys it. But the Democrats could make an overall argument of there's something rotten in Denmark. These guys are now trying to regulate the regulators. There's a swamp they're creating. They've been in power too long. I don't know if they can make it. How do you tailor that message? But it could be part of them that fires up the Dem base. It's already up and ready to go for November.
But the average voter voting on the Supreme Court race in April, voting on the August partisan mm-hmm. primaries, voting in the partisan election in November, they may not care now, but if they have a problem voting, then they care.
That is a real risk for those guys.
Right. Okay, quickly. Let's quickly breeze through the Assembly major bill on giving more power to landlords and limiting the power of local government, restrict regular inspections to blighted or high complaint areas, limit scopes of violations to health, safety, mechanical problems, prohibit reinspection of some properties if no problems within 5 years, puts a limit on 10 days before judges can order the eviction of the victims of domestic violence. Pretty big change?
It would be. It comes on the heels of other changes they've made already. So this is another step.
Yeah.
If they pass it, another step in changing the relationship between landlords and tenants.
Okay. Let's go to your stock picks.
So taxpayers, I mean, this $100 per child credit, it's interesting. There's some politics at play here, I'm sure. I'm sure the time of the checks, right when school starts, 2 months before the election, is just a coincidence. It's not intended, right? But who's going to cash those checks? A lot of suburban moms who happen to be the people who are leaving the Republican Party right now. Why is Governor Walker talking about health care? It's a top issue of suburban women who are leaving the Republican Party in droves. So some of that going on with this. There's also some politics in how they're doing this tax relief, because Republicans in 2014, they had a big surplus then. They went, okay, we're going to buy down the tech college property tax levy by $400 million. Mm-hmm. We're going to redo the holding tables, like how much money you get in your paycheck each week, mm-hmm. and that's going to be our solution. Well, they figured out that property tax relief showed up in December. The vote was in November. Voters didn't see that impact right away. This, I mean, on one hand, you can't buy, the buying down has gone about as far as they can go right now, right? Mm-hmm. The other hand, they know there's a more direct correlation of, okay, these guys gave me a check. These guys are in charge. I may remember that come November. So that might be part of what's happening. The other issue with that politically is there's grumbling about, well, what do we do? Do we really want to do this because it is a gimmicky thing? Now, it may be a smart gimmick, but it's a little gimmicky to send back a check. We saw it in 2000, right? Chuck Kowal and Scott Jensen and Tommy Thompson back then. There's that concern. But do you want to die on this hill, if you're a Republican, about $122 million, a check to voters right for the election, or because you'd rather see it pumped into reducing rates that won't show up.
But Nygaard and Darling both said, hey, we kind of like this. Maybe we're going to approve it.
Again, there's that conservative wing in the Senate. Would it really make a lot of noise? I think they might save their powder for the health care stuff.
Okay.
This may be something you kind of swallow. You don't really like it that much, but you swallow it because you also make Governor Walker look weak by calling for all these things and undercutting him.
Okay, mixed.
So, Tammy Baldwin, when you have a shutdown that starts on Friday at midnight and
she
ends...
She voted to end it.
And Monday, so she's voted... to start it on Friday, but it ended on Monday. Right. I don't think that shutdown is going to have, from talking to people, lasting impact come November. Unless we have another fight in 2 weeks, roughly, February 8th. Does it become an issue of the military versus, you know, Dreamers? Does it become a drawn-out process? So I see Republicans trying to get early hits on her about this. I don't see, from talking to people, a long-term impact. The other thing interesting with Tammy Baldwin this week is you have her two announced Republican opponents bickering over the endorsement of Reince Priebus. This kind of embodies the fight we're seeing between Kevin Nicholson and Leah Vukmir. Vukmir got the Priebus endorsement. Priebus is a former chair of the state and national Republican parties.
Yes.
Basically said he questions the authenticity of Kevin Nicholson. Where was this guy? How do you go from being the president of college Democrats to a candidate for U.S. Senate without something in between that shows me that you're really dedicated to the cause? Kevin Nicholson's shot back was, well, one, his campaign said Priebus once got hit in the head pretty hard and kicked to the curb by President Trump. And then two, there weren't any state conventions in when he was serving overseas in a war zone. This seems to embody that potentially brutal primary they could have. if that happens, that helps Tammy Baldwin.
Okay, but I would be remiss, since we're talking about U.S. senators, Ron Johnson and Secret Society. Big misstep by our senator here?
I talked to somebody and said, we all have our gullible moments,
yeah,
but we're not chair of the Homeland Security Committee in the U.S. Senate.
Yes.
That was not the best thing for him, especially when you're seeing him get mocked by conservatives on social media. We are in an environment in Washington, D.C., where what do you believe anymore? What is too far-fetched? I mean, it's hard to kind of cut through the clutter, but I don't get the impression that was a good move for
and
him.
And at one point, Senator Johnson conceded, yes, that may could have been a joke. Okay, and falling?
The surplus. So let's start doing some math.
Okay, I've got numbers. Go ahead.
So 122 for the child care credit. $50 million bucks
rural
for the WEDIC stuff.
20 creator.
I don't know if that was already in there, though.
All right.
$6.7 million for the sparsity aid. Now, that's all GPR. The $50 million bucks, the reinsurance stuff, that's out of existing Medicaid money or fine savings. Lincoln Hills is $80 million in GPR-supported borrowing. It's not spending. It's you know, borrowing. It's not going to have a big impact this biennium. But what we're seeing is a Republican kind of mantra of if we have a surplus, give it back.
Yep.
They're finding ways to give it back, essentially to spend it. They don't want it in their pocket. They want it in yours. Now, again, with the tax check, something's kind of gimmicky. But we're still looking at going from $385 million for a surplus. We're still north of $100-some million. So we've seen budgets with less room than that.
Right.
But there's not a big cushion. Now, the thing, though, is if you look at the national economy right now, things are humming along pretty well. So if there is a recession coming, it may not be anytime soon. So they may have, and if there is a downturn, there are levers you can pull if you're a Walker administration to control spending and help you out. So I get the impression that Republicans, there's some who are always worried about the structural deficit, and let's be honest, doing things will add to that, but they don't mind spending down this money, especially in election year.
Well, especially, I checked with the Fiscal Bureau, so the net balance on June 30 last year, $514 million. The balance in the Budget Stabilization Fund, same date, $283 million. So your point is that we have it, let's
and Republicans
blow it out the door. Let's give it back.
Even if something goes south, we've got Budget Stabilization, which Governor Walker says, 168 times higher than it was when he took office.
Yeah.
So they have some money in reserve if things went south that they could dip into.
And what does he call it, the $100 per child credit? The reform dividend.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 26.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.